Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning to all of my precious brothers and sisters. God bless you today on this special broadcast of the Wolf Tracker program. Well, in this part of the United States, it's still morning. Parts of Europe, it's afternoon. And a shout out to all of my European brothers and sisters who are tuning in, and God bless you for joining us today on this special broadcast. It's Labor Day. People are taking this day off. People are taking this day to the garage if they haven't done so. Others are putting away their, or preparing to put away all of their pool attachments. Others are getting ready for the autumn. I saw somebody today already starting to rake leaves, and kids are going to be going back to school come this Thursday. And so the summer is winding down. This is the official. Today marks the official end of summer. And now everybody gets back to work. This marks vacation season being over, and this basically everybody gets their head screwed on back properly. They get focused because now it's time to get back to work until Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is our next major holiday, and then after Thanksgiving, shortly after that, it's Christmas. So it's back to work for everybody, and that's why we're doing this special broadcast today, even though I should be off. But the Wolf Tracker never has off. The Wolf Tracker is always tracking sinister ministers and denizens of darkness and all kinds of bishops and archbishops and pseudo-bishops and pseudo-prelates in the church. We're just tracking all kinds of satanic ministers. And today I want to go back in history, and I thought it would be appropriate to kind of play for you some clips of the one man who stood up against the axis of evil. And that one man was Sir Winston Churchill. Back in 1934, when Hitler came to power and Hitler was promoting his ideology of a supreme race, there was one man that God had raised up, and God was grooming him. God had raised him up. God was grooming him. And this man, although he was not a cleric, he was not a member of the clergy, in my humble estimation, he had more of a prophetic gift than do the prophetic charlatans in the church today. That's right. Sir Winston Churchill knew back in 1934 that Hitler was a force to be reckoned with in the near future. And all he had to do was hear about Hitler's ideology of the supreme race and see how Hitler had formed his government based on fascism. And Winston Churchill knew that he was looking at a despot across the sea. He was looking at a tyrant, a dictator across the sea. And you're probably asking, well, what does this have to do with the church? Well, it has a lot to do with the church. Because this is 2016, and I'm telling you that a war is coming. A war is coming. A war. It'll first appear as an ideology. It will first appear as an idea. And then once the ideology is presented and the ideology is embraced and the ideology is adopted, then those who embrace the ideology, those who adopt the ideology, those who accept it as their credo, will then declare war on the rest of us. The same way Nazi Germany, after hearing all of Hitler's speeches, they drank his Kool-Aid, and he convinced them, He hoodwinked them. He bamboozled them into going into war. That's right. One man can do that. Just like the pastor of your church, with all of his rhetoric and all of his crazy speeches, because he's not preaching a sermon. It's just an ideological speech. It's his vision. It's not Christ's vision. It's not a message out of Scripture. It's not a message derived from Holy Writ. It's not a sermon from a properly exegeted text. No. This is a sermon or a teaching, a speech full of rhetoric that is pride on steroids. Just like Hitler's speeches were pride, pomposity, pretentiousness on steroids. So I want to show you, and you know, whenever I'm ready to go into a debate, whenever I'm ready to kick some can is slang for buttocks. And as a wolf tracker, my job is to debate wolves. Now, they don't want to debate anymore because I've kicked so much can that they don't want to get on the stage anymore. They don't want to do it. So I do it on radio. I play their clips, and then I kick their can. I take them to the woodshed, and I give them a good flogging. And they deserve it for fleecing God's people, for taking advantage of widows. Now, there's a new thing. There's a new thing in America. There's a new thing. When a husband dies, now the new thing is for pastors to visit the widow and say, we want to help you, you know, with your financial planning. That's how they get in. Well, sister, do you have a financial planner? No, I don't. Okay, well, I'm going to assist you in financial planning. I'm going to sit down with you, and I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you put your finances together. This way, you know, you can live a wonderful life. And the first thing that they do, as now acting as financial planner, is, well, you know, the first thing you have to do is you have to give 10% to the Lord from your husband's life insurance policy. So the husband had a $500,000 life policy. The pastor's expecting the widow, to cut him a check of $50,000. That's all. They're only after the money. That's the new scam now. The new scam of coming alongside of widows and providing them with financial. In other words, the pastor wants to be the first one to go into the widow's purse and take his cut. Now, do you think if you ever give the pastor $50,000, you're ever going to see that when your kids are hungry? No, you're never going to see it. And these guys, these present day financial planners / ecclesiastical thieves, are pretty much what Jesus described in Matthew 23 when he talked about these Pharisees and the scribes, these hypocrites, who devour widows' households. That's right. So I'm in the business of kicking can. That's my business. I look for wolves that are doing this. Ooh. see, that, my brothers and sisters, is the howl of a wolf who's looking to mix it up. That is a wolf that wants to fight. That's a wolf that wants to get down and dirty. That's a wolf with his chest sticking out, saying, come and get some, Wolf Tracker. Come and get me, Wolf Tracker. See, that's a wolf that wants to get it on, wants to mix it up, wants to fight to the death. See, again, listen. That's a wolf that's saying to Wolf Tracker, come and get some. But as always, after we do the first round, after we mix it up, in the first round, this is what you're going to hear. That's a wolf saying no mas. That's a wolf begging for mercy. That's a wolf who's calling upon the name of the Lord. That's a wolf. That's a wolf saying, please, Mr. Wolf Tracker, don't dish out any more of your medicine. We don't want any more of your medicine. Please, Mr. Wolf Tracker, don't take me to the woodshed. Please, please. That's kicking can. When you hear this, that means we're kicking can. And it's something that needs to be done. And it needs to be done periodically. And so, my brothers and sisters, coming in 2017, I mean, we've been taking care of business this year, but coming 2017... we're going to have to kick more can. We're just going to have to kick a lot of can. And there's a lot of cans. There are a lot of cans to kick. As I have been sharing with you, there is a invasion going on in America. There's a Roman Catholic invasion of the African-American church. And you may say, well, I don't go to an African-American church. I don't worship in a Negro church. I don't worship in a black church. Well, remember when Adolf Hitler started his reign of tyranny. He didn't invade a whole bunch of countries at one time. He started by invading one. And when he conquered that one and saw that there was no resistance, he went and conquered another. And when he saw that the nations didn't even blink, he went and he conquered another. Until he began to gain momentum, and then the world realized that if we don't deal with this man, if we don't deal with his ideology, if we don't deal with what he's bringing, none of us are going to be free. And that's my prophetic argument today. My argument is that the devil, Satan himself, is making great inroads in the African-American church in America. But that's the first group he's invading. And once he fully leavens that group, because you know a little leaven leavens the whole lump. Once he leavens that group just a little bit and corrupts it completely, then he will move on to conquer another group. And back in 1934, 5 years, 5 years before Hitler invaded his first country. 5 years before Hitler invaded his first country, the British bulldog, Sir Winston Churchill, was saying to the British people, "We better get ready, because war is coming our way. War is coming our way." He was a prophet, and not these cheap kind of prophets we have in the church today, which prophesy with great vagueness. Nothing is accurate. Everything is vague. No. Sir Winston Churchill was a prophet's prophet. I'd rather listen. And by the way, when I'm ready to go into a debate, which I don't debate anymore because people don't want to debate the Wolf Tracker. But in my day, when I was finding dopes who would want to debate, I would listen to these speeches just to get into the mindset of kicking some can. 'Cause good old Sir Winston Churchill, he knew how to kick some can. And all you got to do before debate is listen to a few of his clips, and you'll be all psyched out to take care of business. Now, here is Winston Churchill back in 1934. It's almost going to, pretty soon it'll be 100 years that this man made this speech. In 15 years from now, 15 or so years, it'll be 100 years that this man made this speech. And he's warning the British people 5 years before Hitler showed his true colors. 5 years before Hitler showed his true, he says, listen to their ideology, and then also take note that they're building their armada. Take note how they are indoctrinating their people. And also take note that their factories are rumbling, their factories are producing weapons of war. And I'm here to tell you that war is coming to the church. War is coming. But first it appears as an ideology. See, you have to remember that first, war appears as an ideology. So let me give you a scripture text for that. So let's go to Revelation chapter 12. Verse number 13. And it says, "And the dragon," and we know based on Revelation 12:9 that the dragon is none other than Satan. "And the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, and he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child." Now, we can call this World War I. You see, Satan has persecuted the church already. And it goes on to say in verse 14, "And the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time, times, and half a time from the face of the serpent." So now we see that the dragon shifts in shape and goes from dragon to serpent. Now, anytime you read about Satan being a dragon, he is at war. He is persecuting. He is shedding blood. When you see him shift from dragon to serpent, now it speaks of ideology. He's about to spew his ideology. So in verse 15, it reads, "And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause the woman to be carried away or tsunamied away by means of the flood." So now whenever you see the word or the noun serpent, We know that Satan is about to beguile. His war now has taken on a beguiling nature. So now, see, Satan has two ways of warring. He could deceive you. He can beguile you. He can trick you. He could hoodwink you. He could con you, and you become easy prey. And if that doesn't work, then the other way he conquers you is by going out to destroy you. So it's simple. He has two tactics. He either sheds your blood or he tricks you. Now, there's a great many people in the church that Satan already has in their pocket. He's beguiled them. He's deceived them. They do whatever Satan wants them to do. And then there's another group, a remnant group, a group that won't drink the Kool-Aid, a group that won't accept the ideology, a group that just won't go along, and he does what? He persecutes that group. As we read in verse number 16, the earth helped the woman is the church, and the earth opened up her mouth and swallowed up the flood which was cast out of the dragon's mouth. But now you see, we're told that the serpent cast it out, but now the serpent shifted from serpent to dragon again. So now that means war. So if you remember, Germany lost World War I. Well, Revelation 12:13 through 14 says that the dragon tried to kill the woman who brought forth the man-child, but he failed because God made a way of escape for the woman. From that period, he shifted from persecutor now to what? To deceiver. And now that the deception isn't working, because not everybody's accepting the deception, not everyone's taking in the flood, not everyone is drinking the Kool-Aid, then he will go from deceiver to persecutor again. So that's why I'm telling you, as it says here in verse number 16, and the earth helped the woman. The unregenerate mass of humanity opened her mouth and swallowed the flood that came out of the dragon's mouth. The dragon and the serpent is one and the same entity. And the dragon was angry with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed. And who is that group? These are the ones who keep the commandments of God, the Old Testament, and the testimony of Jesus Christ, the New Testament. So I'm telling you, persecution is coming. It's coming. And if you remember, in previous lessons, in previous broadcasts, we talked about how not only is a flood an ideology, but also a flood could be an army of ideologists, people who promote the ideology. We looked at that in Jeremiah 46 and in Jeremiah 47, where the Babylonian armies are compared to a flood that overtake the nations. You read Jeremiah 46 and you read Jeremiah 47, and Jeremiah compares the Babylonian army like a tsunami flood. So when we read this passage, not only is it an ideology that Satan is spewing out of his mouth, but also he's sending an army of people who are going to take that ideology and spread it. It's an army. It's a Babylonian army. And that's why we read in Revelation 17 that the apostate church is called Mystery Babylon. Now, here is Sir Winston Churchill back in 1934 telling us that war was coming because the seeds of war is always ideology. If you have a bad ideology being preached, you will eventually have war as its fruit. Here is Sir Winston Churchill.
After all, my friend, only a few hours away by air, there dwells a nation of nearly 70 million.
And the nation he's talking about is Nazi Germany.
Some of the most educated, industrious, scientific, disciplined people in the world, who are being taught from childhood to think of war as a glorious exercise and death in battle as the noblest fate for man. There is a nation which has abandoned all its liberties in order to augment its collective strength. There is a nation which, with all its strength and virtue, is in the grip of a group of ruthless men preaching a gospel of intolerance and racial pride.
Preaching a gospel of intolerance and racial pride. This guy's a prophet. And you can take this in the you can take his speech in the natural and apply it in the spiritual. Satan is coming with his army. Satan is coming, and his lead man will be Antichrist. Antichrist's lieutenant will be the false prophet. And under Antichrist and the false prophet will be an army of ideologists. And what are they going to preach? A one-world religion. It's already happening. That army is already on the march. That army is already in America. That army has already infiltrated the African-American church. And like I said, the playbook is the same. After Hitler conquered one nation and took full control of that nation and its assets and resources, he went on to conquer another. And you're saying, well, it's not happening to my church, but it's going to come to your church. Because Satan's army, like Hitler's army, is already being indoctrinated, and they're already working the factories, amassing the armaments. They're getting ready. But my question to you on this Labor Day, are we ready? Are we ready to go to war? Are we ready to go to work for Christ?
Unrestrained by law, by parliament, or by public opinion. In that country, all pacifist speeches, all morbid war books are forbidden or suppressed, and their authors rigorously imprisoned. From their new table of commandments, they have omitted, "Thou shalt not kill." It is but 20 years since these neighbors of ours fought almost the whole world and almost defeated them. Now they are rearming with the utmost speed.
They are rearming with the utmost speed. And what is the church doing? Asleep. This invasion of the African-American church by the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, the Roman Catholic Church has basically completely leavened and corrupted the African-American church. I can almost say that the takeover of the African-American church is near complete. So who's next? What's the next segment in Christ's church whom Satan will target? This enemy is preparing and rearming.
And ready to their hands is this new lamentable weapon of the air, against which our navy is no defense, and before which women and children, the weak and frail, the pacifist and the jingo, the warrior and the civilian, the frontline trenches and the cottage home, all lie in equal and impartial peril. Nay, worse still, for with the new weapon has come a new method, or rather has come back the most brutish method of ancient barbarism, namely the possibility of compelling the submission of races by terrorizing and torturing their civil population. And worst of all, the more civilized a country is, the larger and more splendid its cities, the more intricate the structure of its social and economic life, the more is it vulnerable, the more is it at the mercy of those who may make it their prey. Now, these are facts, hard, grim, indisputable facts. And in face of these facts, I ask again, what are we to do?
What are we to do and what are we doing? And I can tell you that the church is asleep. The church, perhaps a great many, want to do like the ostrich. They just want to stick their head in the sand and pray and hope that Satan and his minions will go away. But he's not going to go away, because Satan has an agenda. He has an end time agenda. And that is to have the whole world worship him. Now, I want to read to you Jude verse 3, that little book right before Revelation, that little epistle. And Jude says, in Jude the third verse of the only chapter in the book, he says, "Beloved, when I gave all diligence to write unto you of the common salvation that we share, it was needful for me to write unto you and to exhort you that you should earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered unto the saints. For there are certain men who have crept in unawares." See, they're already in the church. They crept in because many were sleeping. They crept in because many said, "Don't judge them." They crept in because many said, "Oh, they're evangelicals just like us." They were carrying a different gospel. A gospel of demons. But we opened the door. They've crept in. Some have snuck in through the back door. Others crawled in through the bathroom window. Others came in through the basement, but they're in. And Jude says, it's time to earnestly contend for the faith. It's time to fight. It's time to get ready to do battle. It's time to kick some can. Now, in the beginning, they ignored Winston Churchill. They said he was a warmonger. He was just looking for a fight. Just like they say about the wolf tracker. He gets on the radio almost every day, and all wolf trackers looking to fight. Wolf tracker's a warmonger. No, I'm not a warmonger. Do you think that I want to be chasing wolves today when I could be barbecuing? When I can be enjoying the last day of summer? I'm on the air because evil men have crept in. The serpent has cast out of his mouth as it was a flood. And that flood means an army, according to Jeremiah 46 and 47, but also that army carries an ideology. Jude tells us that the army has already passed the borders. They've already invaded. They've already crept in unawares. It's time to fight. 2017 will mark the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. Are we ready to reclaim Christ's church? Are we ready to kick some can? Are we ready to go to war? Or are we just thinking about, well, in a couple of months we'll have Thanksgiving and we'll have Christmas? because the enemy's not thinking about Thanksgiving and Christmas. The enemy's thinking about a full conquest. Now, here is Sir Winston Churchill. And this is his speech on his report on the first 10 weeks of the war. The speech was given November 16th, 1939. You see, he prophesied. He said there's a people across the sea. There's a people across the ocean. They have an ideology. They have a hierarchy. Hitler and his band. They have a hierarchy. They have an ideology. They have a war machine, and they are getting ready. 5 years later, Hitler is reporting to the British people via radio, and he's saying, listen, let me give you a report of the first 10 weeks of the war. Here it is.
I thought it would be a good thing for me to tell you tonight how well the war has turned for the Allies during the first 10 weeks.
In other words, when this war started, the only one mixing it up with the axis of evil, the only one mixing it up with Germany and Italy and Japan, which were the three axis nations, the only one taking on those three nations were the Brits. Because the Brits had a prophet. And prophets just don't prophesy. Prophets go to war, just like Elijah. Elijah prophesied, but then when he needed to go to Mount Carmel and kick some can, he went to Mount Carmel and kicked a lot of can. And so now Churchill talks about the Allies. Others have seen the need to join this reformation. Also, they have joined with Churchill. And he says, now the tide is turning in our favor.
It is only after many vain attempts to remain at peace that we have been at last forced to go to war. We tried again and again to prevent this war. And for the sake of peace, we put up with a lot of things happening which ought not to have happened. But now we are at war. And we are going to make war. And persevere in making war until the other side has had enough of it.
Until the other side starts whining like wolves. And by the way, you know that Adolf Hitler, his tanks, his submarines were all called the Wolf Pack. You know that, right? I mean, the mascot of the German army was the wolf. Hitler's headquarters was called the Wolf's Lair. The Wolf's Lair. The Wolfenstausen. Oh, it's time to kick some can. It's time to make the wolves whine. And that's what I love about Winston Churchill. He says, listen, we tried. We didn't want to go to war. But war came to our doorsteps. Now we're gonna finish it. We didn't look for it. I was not a warmonger. Back in 1934, I was not a warmonger. I was not looking for war. But when you see certain signs, you just know war is headed your way. And it's come home. The chickens have come home to roost. And so we didn't seek it, but we're going to finish it.
Last forced to go to war. We tried again and again to prevent this war. And for the sake of peace, we put up with a lot of things happening which ought not to have happened. But now we are at war, and we are going to make war, and persevere in making war until the other side has had enough of it. We are going to persevere as far as we can to the best of our ability, which is not small and always growing. The superior quality of our Air Force has been proved, both in pilots and in machines, over the enemy. Our aircraft have shot down 15 German overseas raiders without losing one machine in the combat. Now the mists and storms of winter wrap our island and make the continuous bombing attack of military objectives far more difficult. We have also a marked advantage in the higher range of science applied to war, and this is improving with every week that passes. I do not doubt myself that time is on our side. I go so far as to say that if we come through the winter without any large or important event occurring, we shall in fact have gained the first campaign of the war. And we shall be able to set about our task in the spring far stronger, better organized, and better armed than ever before. Let us therefore bear discomfort and many minor and even perhaps needless vexations. Let us bear them with patience, with understanding patience, because we are all the time moving forward towards greater war strength, and because Nazi Germany is all the time under the grip of our economic warfare, falling back in oil and other essential war supplies. Listeners, a long succession of important events has moved in our favor since the beginning of the war. Italy, which we had feared would be drawn from her historic partnership with Britain and France in the Mediterranean, a partnership which will become increasingly fruitful, has adopted a wise policy of peace. No quarrel has developed between us and Japan. These two great powers, which had joined Nazi Germany in the Anti-Comintern Pact, find it difficult to accommodate themselves to the change of front towards Bolshevism, which Herr Hitler and his bad advisor, Herr von Ribbentrop, those marvelous twin contortionists, have perpetrated. No one can underrate the importance of the Treaty of Alliance between Britain and France with Turkey. The Russian-Soviet government, embodied in the formidable figure of Stalin, has barred off once and forever all Nazi dreams of an advance in the East. The left paw of the bear bars Germany from the Black Sea. The right paw disputes with her the control of the Baltic. Whatever history may record about these events, the fact with which we have to reckon is perfectly plain. Nazi Germany is barred off from the East and has to conquer the British Empire and the French Republic or perish in the attempt. It is indeed a solemn moment when I speak to you on this 10th Sunday after the outbreak of war. Solemn. But it is also a moment sustained by resolve and by hope. I am in the singular position of having lived through the early months of the last German war in Europe in the same position in charge of the British Admiralty as I am now. I am therefore very careful not to say anything of an overconfident or unduly sanguine nature. I am sure we have very rough weather ahead. But I have this feeling, which I must impart to you, that the Germany which assaults us all today is a far less strongly built and solidly founded organism than that which the Allies and the United States forced to beg for armistice 21 years ago. I have the sensation and also the conviction that that evil man over there and his cluster of Confederates are not sure of themselves as we are sure of ourselves, that they are harassed in their guilty souls by the thought and by the fear of an ever-approaching retribution for their crimes and for the orgy of destruction in which they have plunged us all. As they look out tonight from their blatant, clattering, panoplied Nazi Germany, they cannot find one single friendly eye in the whole circumference of the globe. Not one. Russia returns them a flinty glare. Italy averts her gaze. Japan is puzzled and thinks herself betrayed. Turkey and the whole of Islam have ranged themselves instinctively but decisively on the side of progress. The hundreds of millions of people in India and China, whatever their other feelings, would regard with undisguised dread a Nazi triumph, well knowing what their fate would soon be. The great English-speaking republic across the Atlantic Ocean makes no secret of its sympathies or of its self-questioning, and it translates these sentiments into action of a character which anyone may judge for himself. The whole world is against Hitler and Hitlerism. Men of every race and clime feel that this monstrous apparition stands between them and the forward move which is their due and for which the age and times are ripe. Even in Germany itself, there are millions who stand aloof from the seething mass of criminality and corruption constituted by the Nazi party machine. Let them then take courage amid perplexities and perils, for it may well be that the final extinction of a baleful domination will pave the way to a broader solidarity of all the men in all the land than we ever could have planned if we had not marched together through the fire.
And it's time to march together through the fire. And that's why I call upon you for help. You see, what was this speech all about? Well, he's saying, listen, at first I was standing alone. At first, the British nation was taking on Nazi Germany on its own. But now we have allies. Now we have people who have rallied around us. Now we are making a united front. And that's what we need. Starting Saturday, November 19th, we are releasing the first of many books. As I shared with you, all of next year we're going to be releasing one book per month, dealing with the Roman Catholic invasion of the African American church. And these books are vital. Why? Because you can take the phrase African American out and you can put in your ethnic group. And you will see how the Roman Catholic Church is going to invade your group. The Roman Catholic Church is Satan's end time army to bring about a one world religion. That is what the serpent is spewing out of his mouth. That's why there's been a resurgence in Roman Catholicism. That's why Benedict XVI was taken out and Pope Francis was put in. There is a resurgence. And we need to understand that this entity, the Roman Catholic Church, Satan's harlot church, Satan's mystery Babylon, wants to wipe us all. Remember, the serpent cast the flood out of its mouth that he might carry away, that he might tsunami away the woman, the church. And God came to the church's aid by giving it two wings. That was the mighty eagle. But also God made the earth to open up the mouth and to drink the Kool-Aid that comes out of the serpent's mouth, the ideology. But we need allies. Coming November 19th, I'm releasing the first book. I need your help. As Satan is spreading his ideology, we must spread Christ's ideology, an ideology of freedom in Christ. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Hitler and fascism wanted to enslave the entire world. Satan and his brand of religious fascism also wants to enslave the world. Now, he's bringing war. We read in Revelation 12:17 that the dragon goes out to make war. He goes out to make war with the seed of the woman, with her remnant. That's us. With those of us who do what? With those of us who love the Lord Jesus Christ and maintain the commandments of God. So, my brothers and sisters, we must fight. We must earnestly contend for the faith. That is our duty. That is our Christian duty. The Bible says that when the enemy would want to come in like a flood, it is the Spirit of the Lord that raises up a standard against him. The Spirit of our God. And what is the standard? The standard is people. The standard is anointed people, that the Spirit of God would raise up anointed people, people who could counter Satan's moves, can counter the moves that Satan's agents will make. And so we must fight. We must continue to fight. We must continue to earnestly put our best foot forward. I want to play another clip for you. Another clip, and this clip is entitled, Give Us the Tools. This is, again, Winston Churchill, and he's asking that he be given the supplies that he may fight on against Nazi Germany and the Axis powers. And my brothers and sisters, what are the tools that I need here? What are your prayers? Can you call upon heaven to bless this ministry, to anoint this ministry, that we might move forward in God's anointing and power to continue to do what God would have us to do? Let me find this speech for you. Here is.
And more than the measure, they have meted out to us. Meet out to the Germans the measure, and more than the measure, they have meted out to us. We will have no truce or parley with you or the grisly gang who work your wicked will.
In other words, we don't make a truce with the devil. Once we start kicking the devil's can, once we start dealing and exposing his operatives, there's no truce. We're not going to sit in the same pew. No, we're going to kick you out. You and all of your Roman Catholic garments and your Roman Catholic liturgy and your prayer books and your Ave Marias and your rosary, all of that gets tossed out with you. You do your worst, and we'll do our best.
Meet out to the Germans the measure, and more than the measure, they have meted out to us. We will have no truce or parley with you or the grisly gang who work your wicked will. You do your worst, and we will do our best.
In the face of the full thrust of German air power, Churchill epitomizes the fighting spirit of Great Britain.
Ah, this is not the end. It is not even the beginning of the end. But it is perhaps the end of the beginning.
Now here's another clip. This is a beautiful, 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 beautiful message right here. And I just want to pick the shortest clip. Here's the shortest clip. This is Winston Churchill talking about Britain's finest hour. A speech he delivered to Parliament in June of 1940.
What General Vagon calls the Battle of France is over. I expect that the Battle of Britain is about to begin. Upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization. Upon it depends our own British life.
Upon this battle, he said, depends the saving of Christian civilization. Listen to that again. And remember that Nazi Germany was in cahoots with the Roman Catholic Church. When Nazi Germany fell, it was the Roman Catholic Church who gave many of the Nazi war criminals safe passage into South America. Nazi Germany was in bed with Rome, and Rome was in bed with Nazi Germany. Nazi Germany was the political arm of Satan in the 1940s, and Rome was the religious arm of Satan. They worked hand in hand. And listen to what Churchill says. This battle is about the survival of Christian civilization.
What General Vagon calls the Battle of France is over. I expect that the Battle of Britain is about to begin. Upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization.
Upon this battle depends the survival. We have a Christian world today because this British bulldog stood up. And for the most part, he stood by himself until Roosevelt joined in. But for a long time, Roosevelt in America was on the sidelines looking and doing nothing. It was Winston Churchill, the prophet, the prophesying prophet and the slaying prophet, the warring prophet, who saved Western civilization and Christian civilization, for that matter.
Upon it depends our own British life and the long continuity of our institutions and our empire. The whole fury and might of the enemy must very soon be turned on us. Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be free, and the life of the world may move forward into broad, sunlit uplands. But if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age, made more sinister and perhaps more protracted by the lights of perverted science.
Did you hear that? If he says, if we don't take a stand here, if we don't stand our ground here, even the United States will be history. This is profound. I can listen to this man all day long.
The enemy must very soon be turned on us. Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be free, and the life of the world may move forward into broad, sunlit uplands. But if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age, made more sinister and perhaps more protracted by the lights of perverted science. Let us, therefore, brace ourselves to our duties and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
If we can survive Germany, if we can defeat them, if we can stand our ground, if we can repel them, if we can send them back to the gates of hell where they came from, then 1,000 years from now, men will say, that was Britain's finest hour. Now here is Churchill asking every man to his post.
When I said in the House of Commons the other day that I thought it improbable that the enemy's air attack in September could be more than 3 times as great as it was in August, I was not, of course, referring to barbarous attacks upon the civil population, but to the great air battle which is being fought out between our fighters and the German Air Force. This effort of the Germans to secure daylight mastery of the air over England is, of course, the crux of the whole war. So far, it has failed conspicuously. It has cost them very dear. And we have felt stronger and are actually and relatively a good deal stronger than when the hard fighting began in July. There is no doubt that Herr Hitler is using up his fighter force at a very high rate, and that if he goes on for many more weeks, he will wear down and ruin this vital part of his air force. That will give us a very great advantage. On the other hand, for him to try to invade this country without having secured mastery in the air would be a very hazardous undertaking. If this invasion is going to be tried at all, it does not seem that it can be long delayed. The weather may break at any time. Besides this, it is difficult for the enemy to keep these gatherings of ships waiting about indefinitely while they are bombed every night by our bombers and very often shelled by our warships, which are waiting for them outside. Therefore, we must regard the next week or so as a very important week for us in our history. It ranks with the days when the Spanish Armada was approaching the Channel and Drake was finishing his game of bowls, or when Nelson stood between us and Napoleon's Grand Army at Boulogne. We've read about all this in the history books, but what is happening now is on a far greater scale and of far more consequence to the life and future of the world and its civilization than these brave old days of the past. Every man and woman will therefore prepare himself to do his duty.
Every man and woman shall prepare themselves to do their duty. And it's the same in the church. Jew said, beloved, Greek agapetos. That term is a term of endearment, and it applies to men and women. It applies to clergy and laymen. It is a term for little lambs and mature saints, mature sheep. Agapetos, beloved, is applicable to everyone who is a child of God. It does not discriminate. It doesn't just say leaders to the fore, leaders to your post. No. As Winston Churchill here, he says, every man and every woman to their post. Every saint to your post. I need you, and the Lord needs you. Come November 19th, we can start now to spread the word about these upcoming books. I need you to help me to spread the word about this broadcast. I need you to help me spread the word about the Roman Catholic invasion of the Protestant Church. Next year marks the 500th anniversary when Martin Luther nailed the 95 Theses on the Wittenberg Church door. We kicked Roman Catholicism out, but it's making inroads back in. What are we going to do? Are we going to be found at our post, or shall we be found derelict of duty?
But what is happening now is on a far greater scale and of far more consequence to the life and future of the world and its civilization than these brave old days of the past. Every man and woman will therefore prepare himself to do his duty, whatever it may be, with special pride and care. Our fleets and flotillas are very powerful and numerous. Our air force is at the highest strength it has ever reached, and it is conscious of its proved superiority, not indeed in numbers, but in men and machines. Our shores are well fortified and strongly manned, and behind them, ready to attack the invaders, we have a far larger and better equipped mobile army than we have ever had before. This is a time for everyone to stand together and hold firm, as they are doing. I express my admiration for the exemplary manner in which all the air raid precaution services of London are being discharged, especially the fire brigades, whose work has been so heavy and also dangerous. all the world that is still free marvels at the composure and fortitude with which the citizens of London are facing and surmounting the great ordeal to which they are subjected, the end of which, or the severity of which, cannot yet be foreseen. It is a message of good cheer to our fighting forces on the seas, in the air, and in our waiting armies, in all their posts and stations, that we send them from this capital city. They know that they have behind them a people who will not flinch or weary of the struggle, hard and protracted though it will be, but that we shall rather draw from the heart of suffering itself the means of inspiration and survival, and of a victory won not only for ourselves, but for all. A victory won not only for our own time, but for the long and better days that are to come.
So prophetic. The liberties that we enjoy today are because of this man and because of the British people, as we call them in America, the greatest generation. The greatest generation. Now, as I said, today's broadcast is a rallying cry. I know that today you're saying, but, you know, please give us rest. And, well, in my opinion, you've had enough rest. We've had enough rest. We've had enough vacation time. We've had enough barbecues. Tomorrow, I want you to go to sleep tonight when you put your head on your pillow. I want you to remember what this man said. And it is so prophetic even today. Because tomorrow, Satan and his forces will still be marching. And I wonder whether we're going to be at our post or not. I'm going to be at my post. I have been at my post. I have been writing. I have been editing. I have been researching. I have been teaching. I have been preaching. I have been recording. I've been doing all things necessary to prepare for next year. Can I count on your support? Can we maximize this effort of mine by you coming alongside me? And remember, saints, this broadcast is not about a personality. When the Lord told me to start this broadcast, I have never used my name. I have never promoted my person. I go by the moniker Wolf Tracker, and that's as far as it goes. This broadcast is about the Lord Jesus Christ, the head of the church, and his lambs and his sheep. This broadcast has always been about me protecting you from the wolves. This has never been a platform for me. You don't even know my name. All you know me by is a moniker. I am not doing this to gain popularity. I don't need it. I don't want it. I don't seek it. I seek to make a difference as I stand at my post. It's all I seek to do, to stand at my post. To hold this little hill until the Lord comes. To cede the enemy not an inch of advancement. And I want to end the broadcast with this clip, which is my favorite. Listen to this inspiring clip by the British Bulldog himself, Sir Winston Churchill.
when Napoleon lay at Boulogne for a year with his flat bottom boats and his grand army, he was told by someone, there are bitter weeds in England. There are certainly a great many more of them since the British Expeditionary Force returned. Sir, I have myself full confidence that if all do their duty, if nothing is neglected, and if the best arrangements are made, and they are being made.
If all do their duty, and if the preparations and the preparations are made, which are being made. See, all must do their duty, and we must all make the proper preparations, which is what we're doing now. I am making the proper preparations so that when January of 2017 comes, we're going to give the enemy shock and awe. For 12 months, each and every month in 2017, we're going to release one book per month. The preparations are being made right now. We have so many books to release that I have to release one. I have to release a book in November of this year. Simply because we have more than 12. We're releasing one November the 19th. And if you want to get on the press release list, if you want to know the titles of the book, the primary title, the secondary titles, when the books are going to be released, and how you can get these books, how you can avail yourself of them, for a donation, then email us at 95thesis2017@gmail.com. 95thesis2017@gmail.com. We are making the preparations. All do their duty. We're going to win. We're going to make a difference. But we need to make the preparations, and we all need to do our part.
When Napoleon lay at Boulogne for a year with his flat bottom boats and his grand army, he was told by someone, there are bitter weeds in England. There are certainly a great many more of them since the British Expeditionary Force returned. Sir, I have myself full confidence that if all do their duty, if nothing is neglected, and if the best arrangements are made, and they are being made, we shall prove ourselves once more able to defend our island home, to ride out the storm of war, and to outlive the menace of tyranny, if necessary, for years, if necessary, alone.
If I have to do this by myself in 2017, so be it. Jesus will find me at my post. But I shouldn't be alone. We should marshal our forces together. We should neglect nothing. We should do all. And we should all be together. But if need be, if my voice lands on deaf ears, if I have to do it alone, like Antipas, let me read to you from the book of Revelation, Revelation chapter 2. Revelation 2. It says, Jesus speaking to the church of Pergamos. He says, Revelation 2:13, I know thy works and where you dwell, even where Satan's seat is, and how you have held fast my name, and you have not denied my faith, even in those days wherein Antipas. The name Antipas is a nickname. It's not a real name. It's a nickname. Anti means against, and pas means against all. Jesus is honoring a man who was willing to stand by himself against all. And Jesus dubbed him Antipas, the one who stood against them all, it says. And thou holdest fast my name and hast not denied my faith, even in those days wherein Antipas, my faithful martyr, was slain among you, even where Satan dwells. You see, war's coming, saints. And if Satan was in that city. And whenever you put Satan and a saint together, whenever you put the dragon and a saint together, you're going to have spilled blood because it's war. And Jesus says, I had a servant who was willing to stand against all, and I dubbed him Antipas. And this is what Winston Churchill is saying, if I have to stand alone, so be it. If I look behind me and there's no one standing with me shoulder to shoulder, I'll stand alone. So be it. But we shall fight. And we shall never give up.
Once more able to defend our island home, to ride out the storm of war, and to outlive the menace of tyranny, if necessary for years, if necessary alone. At any rate, that is what we are going to try to do. That is the resolve of His Majesty's government, every man of them. That is the will of Parliament and the nation, the British Empire and the French Republic, linked together in their cause and in their need, will defend to the death their native soil, aiding each other like good comrades to the utmost of their strength.
You see, defend to the death. That's what a martyr does. Defend to, you know, death is coming. I know that I'm going to be a marked man. I know that once these books are released, I'll be a marked man for the 100th time, because I've been all throughout my ministerial career, I've been a marked man. But I'll be a marked man all over again when I bombard these people with more than 12 books to the death. Because that's what's coming. It's either I kick their can or they kick mine. And I'm looking to kick their can theologically. And they're looking to kick mine physically. I'm going to put a hurting on them theologically, and they're going to try to put a hurting on me physically. And if that's what it comes to, then so be it.
The British Empire and the French Republic, linked together in their cause and in their need, will defend to the death their native soil, aiding each other like good comrades to the utmost of their strength. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. And if, which I do not for a moment believe, this island or a large part of it were subjugated and starving, then our empire beyond the seas, armed and guarded by the British fleet, would carry on the struggle until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of the old.
We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in France. We shall fight in England. We shall fight. And we shall never surrender. Well, saints, I hope you were blessed today. I'm going to continue with my dear friend, Winston Churchill. I'll be listening to his speeches all day long. I'll be deriving inspiration from what this man says, because I know what's coming. I've been talking about what's coming for years now, long before. Because the Bible was already telling us what was coming. I'm ready. I'll be at my post. Will you join me? God bless you.